The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and recriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents... Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes. It is Wednesday, April 28th, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us here for the next 60 minutes of news, talk, interviews, information, music, comedy, and more by, for, and about the cannabis community. And joining me here in the studio, pushing the buttons and turning the knobs, the maestro himself, Ganja John.
Hey, everybody. I'm sick as a dog today. If I miss every cue, it's because I can't hear a thing. But otherwise, I'm doing fine.
Like this exit that's playing up here right now when it shouldn't be.
Is it?
Yes,
oh my
it is.
God.
That's okay, John. We know how it goes.
Yeah, I don't know why that played, but
it happens.
It happens. I'm sorry, guys.
Also joining us in our virtual studio from beautiful Astoria, Oregon, my good friend and half sister, Cannabis Carrie.
Hi, guys. Oh, sorry you're feeling a little under the weather, Ganja John. We hope you're feeling better by the end of the day.
Yeah, your connection sounds really clear, Carrie. Yeah. Nice to have you here.
Yeah, you guys sound great, too, I have to say. This is the clearest connection we've had since January 3rd or whenever that was, so bravo.
Yeah, we're working all the kinks out here in the new Rolla J Studios. Lots of high-tech equipment that I'm far too unqualified to hook up. But we got a good friend at the cafe, Johnny Nine, who's going to come out here. And he worked a 96-channel Mackie board for a church. So he's
52-channel.
52?
Don't give him too much credit.
Well, 96, 52, it's close.
Whatever.
Anyway, he's going to come in here and help us get it. Things rewired. That'll be really cool. Got all sorts of people in the chat today because, of course, today is Wednesday, our day for cannabis science. Dr. Mitch Earlywine joins us from the State University of New York at Albany. He'll be answering your live questions from the chat room right at the bottom of the hour. Speaking of questions from the chat room, Grand Poobah wants to know if I enjoyed the medicine at the expo this last weekend. Yes, Grand Poobah, we very much enjoyed the medicine. We also enjoy the essential vape that we got. This is the newest, biggest hit at the Cannabis Cafe, EssentialVape.com. Oh, this is an amazing thing here. We'll show this on cam right now. While I'm showing this, Carrie, why don't you give us a hint at what's coming up at our headlines right after the first break?
We've got some amazing stories today. I sort of feel like every week now we have our featured state day.
Yeah,
so many states are passing and trying to pass medical marijuana. So today we're going to cover a state and their plan to try to get medical marijuana in their state. We also have another story about some college football players that have run afoul of the law and an amazing world story. We're going to go beyond U.S.'s border today. And, I mean, Russ, this story actually just blew me away. So I will let you know about that coming up.
All right. Some world news coming up right after our first break. Also, we've got our Irie Wednesday Daily Toker Tunes. Today we'll be listening to a group called Wildlife and a tune called Ganja Yard. We'll talk to Johnny Reeferseed out of Iowa right at 20 after the hour. Dr. Mitch at 30 after the hour. And then at the end of the show, I'm going to talk a little bit about a new study that shows the ineffectiveness of workplace urine testing as a way of measuring workplace safety. All of that and more coming up on Normal Show Live right after these messages.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 14 states today, and THCF has clinics in 10 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Michigan, New Mexico, and Rhode Island. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or call 1-800-723-0188.
When I was in England, I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale, and never tried it again.
I think you'd probably be a lot cooler if you had, Mr. President.
I said, hey, do you have a joint case? Sure would be a lot cooler if you did. Lie, don't hide it.
Lie, don't hide it.
Oh, lie, don't hide it.
Lie, don't hide it.
Just lie, don't hide it.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carry.
In a related story to yesterday's report about Florida State athlete Aaron Hernandez's college marijuana use, four North Carolina football players have been cited for, quote, maintaining a dwelling for the purpose of using a controlled substance. And three of the four have also been charged with marijuana possession and possession of drug paraphernalia. Raleigh Police Department responded with a warrant after an off-duty police officer who had been hired as a security for the college and apartments smelled burning marijuana while patrolling the apartment complex where the four athlete students lived. Marcus Kuhn, Jake Vermiglio, J.R. Sweezy, and George Byron were all cited during the incident, along with a 22-year-old woman who was present. Two additional students were not charged. Now, between the seven students there, the police confiscated two homemade bongs, a multicolored glass bong, three clear sandwich bags containing approximately 6 grams of marijuana total, and a blunt cigar containing some marijuana. That was all from the apartment, according to the warrant. The warrant also stated the finding of Byron's BlackBerry, which contained images of a marijuana plant in growth. All four of the players were expected to play a substantial role next fall for the Wolfpack, especially Byron, the Wolfpack's returning starter at tight end and a 2009 first-team All-ACC selection. Vermiglio and Kuhn are also starters. North Carolina State football coach Tom O'Brien said in a statement that he is aware of the situation and appropriate action will be taken. Ressa, it looks like marijuana is popular with college kids. Who knew?
Oh, wow. Breaking news. This just in. Yeah. I love this. Maintaining a dwelling for the purposes of the consumption of an illegal substance. Maintaining a drug house. They were maintaining a drug house with three bongs and 6 whole grams of marijuana. Oh, my God. It's a nightmare. It's out of control. A drug house run amok. You know, the lengths that we will go to punish people for their use of cannabis, young people especially, just never fails to amaze me. The part that Carrie mentioned, too, about the BlackBerry images, you know, the cell phone photos of a plant in bloom, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean it's their plant that they're growing. I mean, they might have friends that are growing. They might know someone who's growing. Hell, it might have been a pic that they downloaded off of HighTimes.com for all we know, right? So this idea that even just the image of the plant is something that's to be feared is something that always gets to me. You know, I'm not wearing it today, but I usually wear a hat with a hemp leaf on it, you know, a pot leaf on it. I just haven't got it embroidered onto these new hats yet. And it just amazes me how many people will react to that image, the image of the leaf. And to me, it's kind of funny too, because, you know, I used to watch a lot of videos, MTV and such, and whenever a rapper or somebody would have a pot leaf necklace or a pot leaf on their hat or something, they'd always blur it out. And to me, it's like, I could understand if they were to blur out the image of a joint or a bong or a syringe or a line of cocaine. I can see blurring that out. I can see the reasoning behind that because you're not wanting to condone drug use or whatever. I don't agree with it. I very rarely agree with censorship, but at least I understand the logic there. But the banning of the image of a leaf, I mean, that just shows you how much this is about, you know, the banning of nature, about the denial of our natural heritage here in this country. So again, I'm a little off track with the North Carolina football players here, but you know, it's well known that many athletes are using marijuana. They're using it as a pain reliever. They're using it as an anti-inflammatory. And I see no reason to impact their careers, their college scholarships or anything because they might have chosen to use the safest therapeutically known substance known to man.
The latest state to consider whether medical marijuana should be available if recommended by a doctor is Tennessee. The Tennessee state legislature may take up the question next year after agreeing to send it to a study group first. The House Health and Human Resources Committee voted yesterday to call on state health, agricultural, and law enforcement officials to study medical marijuana and deliver a report to the legislature no later than February 15, 2011, ending a debate on the issue that had lasted for the last 2 weeks. The committee did not approve any additional funding for the study, leaving it up to the state boards of pharmacy to decide whether to take up the matter. If it does go forward, the study could set up a debate over medical marijuana early next year. A medical marijuana bill sponsored by State Representative Jeannie Richardson prompted the discussion that several lawmakers expressed concerns over. Bernie Ellis, an activist who wrote the bill and presented it to the legislature, estimated that 25,000 Tennesseans use marijuana illegally to deal with chronic conditions and side effects of diseases such as cancer, AIDS, and MS. Ellis says his bill would legalize use under a tightly regulated system. Indeed, as the bill requires the medical marijuana to be grown by licensed farmers and dispensed through pharmacies. If the bill passes, Tennessee would become a medical marijuana no garden state, and home cultivation would not be allowed. A lot can change in 8 months, but for now, it's in the hands of the officials and what they have to say in the study.
You know, as these bills continue to be introduced in legislatures east of the Mississippi, we're finding more and more that they do not include the right to home grow. More and more, they're wanting to completely control the production of the marijuana and the dispensing of the marijuana to avoid it getting into the hands, you know, of the users who most desperately need it. Of course, this means, you know, more regulation, more fees that have to be paid, more taxes, more cost to the consumer. Something that Normal has always stood for and will always stand for is the right to home grow. We're all for, you know, taxation, regulation, commercial, whatever. That's all well and good. You can, you know, nibble around the edges of that however you want, set up whatever regulations are reasonable. But we've got to hold on to the right to home grow, because without it, we're completely at the mercy of the government or a corporation providing us our medicine. Now, in the case of Tennessee, if they have this system set up with licensed farmers and dispensaries and the patients can't grow their own, how are we to know, you know, they're going to be growing the best possible medicine? It's just really disappointing to see more and more of these states that are ignoring this right to home grow. And I think part of it is that these lawmakers in these states point to the Western states that have home grow, that have very open medical marijuana, and in particular, California and Colorado and to a lesser extent, Montana. And they look at these areas with the so-called nonprofit dispensaries or collectives or co-ops, whatever they're organized under, and it frightens the hell out of them because they see all the cultural affectations of the marijuana subculture, what they consider an illegal subculture, being carrying over into what's supposed to be a medical compassionate use system. Right? I mean, when we look at the dispensaries with the big marijuana neon leafs and, you know, High Times magazines in them and medical cannabis cups, you know, there's so much bleed over. There's so much convergence between the social aspect and the medical aspect that it frightens these people who have always had this prejudice against the social aspects of cannabis, against the people who have used cannabis socially. It's a shame. I'm not saying that, you know, those of us in the West need to change the way we're doing things. I think we're doing things the right way. I think part of this is going to just be more education for those people back east to let them know what's really happening out here. They hear these scare stories. Oh, there's so much crime around dispensaries. When in fact there aren't. And in fact, dispensaries seem to have less crime than other comparable businesses, liquor stores or convenience stores or banks or whatever. Pharmacies, for that matter, people breaking in to get OxyContin or whatever. And they see, they hear these terrible scare stories, you know, like, Chris Goldstein once said, he talks to the guys in Pennsylvania and the legislature say, well, we don't want what's going on in California. And he turns to them and says, well, what's wrong with California? And they're at a loss to explain what's wrong with California. Oh, well, the crime around dispensaries. Well, no, there's no major crime around dispensaries. The problem they have with California, Colorado, and to a lesser extent Montana, is the lack of it being clinical, right? Of the medical marijuana not being clinical and being more social and having all those social overtones. What we need to do as activists is to educate them, to let them know that it is indeed medical, and just because some people may enjoy it socially doesn't mean that the medical users aren't using it medically.
Yesterday in New Zealand, police shut down all 16 branches and the distribution center of a hydroponic cultivation chain called Switched On Gardener. Hundreds of people were arrested, ranging in age from 20 to 60, including customers of the stores. Many of those arrested are facing charges for selling equipment for growing marijuana. The New Zealand Herald is reporting that police raided 35 businesses and homes throughout the country as part of a two-year undercover police investigation codenamed Operation Lime. Police Minister Judith Collins congratulated officers on shutting down what they claim is a major source of equipment for commercial marijuana growers. Police also seized records showing who was buying the growing equipment and are planning to launch more stings to catch suspects in the act of growing or selling cannabis. Collins said in a press conference after the raids, quote, "The message to those who manufacture and sell drugs in our communities is that the government and police are determined to shut down your activities and will use every tool at their disposal to do so." Owners and workers of the Switched On Gardener stores were arrested and are due to appear in courts throughout New Zealand on charges of cannabis cultivation and participating in an organized criminal group. Deputy Police Commissioner Rob Pope said that Operation Lime would break the cornerstone of the illicit cannabis cultivation industry. He also said that cannabis is the most abused controlled substance in the Polynesian nation, ending with this, quote, "The harm that this drug causes New Zealand communities can be conservatively estimated at $430 million a year." There were no explanations of where those figures came from or even what they represent. The search warrants that were issued yesterday were issued in every police district in the country, making this the largest scale police coordination in the country's history. During the undercover operation, police agents claimed they bought growing equipment, were given advice on how to cultivate cannabis, and even purchased some cannabis clones and other drugs over the counter from these offenders. The 250 people that were arrested are facing over 700 charges against them. More than 100 commercial cannabis growing operations linked to the businesses were also raided. Police are claiming they seized methamphetamine, LSD, ecstasy, and firearms, not surprising in a bust this large. And in a threat to anyone in New Zealand who grows cannabis or has purchased equipment at one of the popular horticulture shops, Deputy Commissioner Pope said that criminals that have bought equipment for their cannabis grows have been observed and followed and can expect to receive a visit from the police. Now, interestingly, 1 year into this mass investigation, New Zealand passed a Criminal Proceeds Recovery Act in 2009 that allows law enforcement to seize assets and money, and now proceedings to confiscate property from those arrested have begun. Understandably, cannabis activists in the country are reeling from the day-long event, but have begun to organize and protest what they see as a massive waste of police resources.
Hey, Carrie, did you say that the cost was $430 million for marijuana users?
Well, that's what Commissioner Rob Pope said, that that the cost to communities in New Zealand yearly was, that was his conservative estimate, but he ended on that statement in the conference, so we have no idea where those stats are coming from.
Yeah, I'm wondering if New Zealand's GDP is over $430 million.
Really?
There's a question. Seriously. Well, you know, I've been crunching the numbers here while we've been talking. Thanks to the Google is an amazing thing here. $430 million per year, they say, in New Zealand. Now, according to nationmaster.com, I just got the statistics on cannabis use within within the last year. Annual cannabis use in the state, in the country of New Zealand, 22% of New Zealanders will use cannabis over the previous year. That's over one in five. The entire country has a population of 4.2 million people. That works out to, if 22% of them are using cannabis, that works out to 924,000 users. Now, if we take 430 million, let's see, and we divide it by the 924,000, then this person is claiming that every cannabis consumer in New Zealand costs the country $465 per year. Now, for comparison's sake, we just saw that Canadian study that showed that every Canadian costs the country $20 per year. So I don't know what it is about New Zealand, John, but for some reason, it's much more expensive to the country there in New Zealand.
They're an island. I mean, I don't know.
Maybe it's an island thing. Maybe it's all that Lord of the Rings filming they did down there.
That's probably it.
All right, folks, time to take a break, especially those of you out on the East Coast. It is 20 after the hour. We will do the same when we come back. Your Daily Toker Tunes from Ivy Wednesday.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man, a reefer man? Have you ever met that funny reefer man, a reefer man? If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Law420.com.
Hello, I'm Russ Belville, Outreach Coordinator for Normal. In my job, I read literally hundreds of headlines each month involving nonviolent, productive citizens whose lives are ripped apart by a marijuana or drug arrest. Many citizens could avoid arrest by refusing police searches and remaining silent, but police are well trained to confuse and intimidate. That's why you have a right to speak to an attorney before answering any police questions. I hope you never need to exercise that right, but if you do, make your first call to the law offices of John C. Lucy IV. John Lucy is an accomplished criminal defense attorney with expertise in Oregon's medical marijuana law. John Lucy understands and respects cannabis and drug consumers of all backgrounds. Call John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit in downtown Portland. Address available at law420.com. That's John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit law420.com today.
In terms of legalization of drugs, I think that the battle, the war on drugs has been a utter failure.
The war on drugs has been a utter failure,
And I think that we need to rethink and decriminalize, criminalize our marijuana laws, The war on drugs has been a utter failure.
Normal Show Live, where we don't change our position on decriminalization in an election year.
Hey, it's 23 after the hour. I want to remind everyone this Saturday is the Global Marijuana March in over 300 cities across the United States and the world. Check out normal.org for the list of cities.
It's time for your Daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we get tunes for Ivy Wednesday, our celebration of that mellow vibe we find in the best of reggae, ska, calypso, and Latin music. Brought to you by Johnny Reeverseed and the High Rollers, America's favorite red-eyed soul rock and roll band, available now on iTunes and CD Baby. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
All right, we head all the way out to the state of Iowa and our good friend Johnny Reefer Seed. Johnny, how you doing today?
Hey, good. How you doing, Russ? Sorry I missed you last week. I had so much fun on 420. I couldn't find my phone the next day.
Oh, I know how that goes. I've had those kind of parties. So what's happening? You guys getting ready for the march down there in Iowa somewhere?
Yeah, we are. It's going to take place at high noon at the state capitol.
Oh, excellent.
Here in Des Moines.
Oh, that's...
Yeah. And then after that, we're having an after party, and it'll be a good time.
Oh, I'm sure it'll be plenty of good times, plenty of good music, too. And you always bring us some great music, some great reggae tunes. And what do we got for today?
This is another one that Silken Tan forwarded to us. This is George Wildlife Scott. He hails from the parish of Clarinda, Jamaica, West Indies. As most people from the rural parishes do, he came to Kingston with his mother, where he attended school. He's an alignment technician by day and a musician at night. Years ago, Wildlife recorded his first tune, Work So Hard, with Caveman, the musical teacher of reggae superstars like Luciano, Sizzla, and Jacques. Wildlife is currently working with reggae legend Bunny Wailer and has a tune on the Tech Set album, Volume 1, called Farming Time, co-written by Bunny. I'm looking forward to hearing that. Today's every Wednesday Toker Tune, Ganja Yard, is another song that will be in the running for the Marijuana Music Awards, which you can check out at www.marijuanamusicawards.com. Learn more about Wildlife at www.myspace.com/wildestlife. That's WILDESTLIFE. And you can purchase this music on iTunes. It's available there. So listen up to Ganja Yard by Wildlife.
All right, Ganja Yard by Wildlife coming at you here. Thanks, Johnny. And check out Marijuana Music Awards. They were really helpful in getting us our tunes when we first started here as the Daily Audio Stash. Here you go, Wildlife, Ganja Yard.
Let me see him one. Where we come from? Hey, Ganja Yard. That's where I'm from. Ganja Yard. That's why I misbelief them so long. Always wrong. Ganja Yard. Hey, a wildlife I tell them. Better bring a whole heap of weed, nobody bring no little bit. No little piece of weed they can't build a bridge split. Man, I agree with me one dung in a me chalice. When me bunny tickle lift me iris. Hey, black warrior him turn to the east and bless it. If you don't have no food, let me advise you left it. Man, I if you lick it one hungry belly, it will lick you down. Ganja Yard, that's where I'm from. Ganja Yard, that's why me sleep them so long. Me come from Ganja Yard, that's why me chalice always ram. Ganja Yard, Ganja Yard. Well, me have me knife, me say it sharp and babble. Me have me cafe.
You must take man fit you.
so long. Ganja, yeah, hard. That's why me Charlie's always wrong. Ganja, yeah.
Wildlife with Ganja Yard. Thank you to Johnny Reeferseed, and thank you to Tam from Marijuana Music Award for sending all those songs our way. Check out MarijuanaMusicAwards.com. Get your votes in for the best in Stony 420 music. We're right back with Dr. Mitch after this.
Normal Show Live is brought to you by our advertisers and supported by the generous tax-deductible donations of our listeners. If you'd like to make a monetary donation to the show, visit secure.normal.org/donate. Fill in the dollar amount and specify Normal Show Live in the comments. If you'd like to donate equipment or items to be used for prize promotions on the show, please send them to 4110 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard, number 161, Portland, Oregon, 97214. If you need a receipt for tax deduction purposes, please indicate the value of the items you are donating. Thank you for contributing to the fight for your own freedom.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
It's time for Normal Show Live's Cannabis Science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York in Albany. Now, open wide and say, here's your dose of cannabis science.
All right, welcome back. It's 32 after the hour, and we're glad to have Dr. Mitch Earlywine on the line. Dr. Mitch, welcome back to the show.
Pleasure to be here.
Oh, sounds like we got us a good connection with you today. Everyone's looking forward to it. So I'm just going to jump right into the questions, unless you have some new data or information we should know of first.
There is a new study out by Mike Belinsky's crew suggesting a small but significant link between cannabis use and panic. And I just want to point out that I think this is probably a product of prohibition, because we now have, THC high strains that don't have the cannabidiol that takes that panic edge off. And so I don't want folks to get all worked up thinking they're going to have a panic attack if they find the good kush or something. The clincher is, if there's a strain that makes you a little anxious, by all means, move to another one.
You know, that the way you phrase that brings up a thought in my mind, too. You know, there's the old joke or our old saying here at Normal that a cannabis smoker is arrested every 37 seconds, and you wonder why we're paranoid. Do you put a lot of the prohibition of cannabis to ascribe some of these reactions that people say they have from it, that it makes them paranoid, that they feel persecuted? I mean, when we really are?
In truth, I think that that's a realistic concern. In fact, when you think about some relatively ambiguous stimuli, like the sound of a siren, could be really interpreted badly if you happen to be, essentially guilty of a misdemeanor simply because of possession. So I think that that's something that doesn't get assessed in these kinds of studies and is a completely reasonable alternative.
alternative explanation for some of these results.
All right. Okay, let's get to the questions here, and we'll bring your volume up just a little bit more for the folks in the chat room. They're having trouble hearing you, but we have our first question from Rainbow Family, who says they've got a lot of good anecdotal experience regarding cannabis salve. And I know Rainbow. She works in the cannabis cafe. They've been using this cannabis salve lately. Seems to work very well when applied topically, but she says she understands cannabis is not absorbed through the skin, so how is this working? How is this cannabis salve helping people, or is she wrong about cannabis not being absorbed through the skin?
In fact, it looks like it's really hard for THC to be absorbed transdermally, and it doesn't mean that other cannabinoids aren't getting through that we just don't know about. But what I would say is try the salve made the exact same way without the cannabis, and gee, how does that work? It's stunning how well salves work even without cannabinoids, so I want to keep that in mind in a sense as sort of a built-in control group. But I don't think she's making this up. I mean, I've heard many a case of this as well. Clearly there's a mechanism or a cannabinoid that we just don't quite understand yet that's contributing to the impact of these salves.
Yeah, my mom, this is Ganja John, Dr. Mitch. My mom's been using it for about a month or so, and she tells me that every time she uses it, she gets the munchies. So, I mean, she's not getting a high, obviously, but she's getting some of the side effects of cannabis use, I suppose.
It sounds really intriguing. I wish there were money for more research on this topic.
All right. A question here from John916. He says he's trying to quit smoking cigarettes, and I've recently been told to just substitute marijuana for my cigarette use. I'm not sure it's going to end up working. Are there any suggestions to quit using cigarettes that involve cannabis use?
As it turns out, despite a lot of anecdotal stories, I can't recommend this one. It just doesn't seem to turn out particularly well, and I find people end up leaning on their cannabis or using markedly more than they normally would under these circumstances. The clincher for cigarettes is really learning how to surf the urge, if you will. I think what happens is we catastrophize about nicotine craving and think, oh my God, this is the biggest disaster ever and it's never going to end. But just like hunger or thirst or other urges, we find they tend to ebb and flow depending on our environment, our distraction, our other situations. So if you can get yourself distracted, sit down with a nice big glass of water, stay away from cues for smoking, and essentially limit that contact, it's surprising how just the first couple of days are really aversive, but after that, most of the relapses is not about craving and urge so much as a willful decision to turn back. And I really encourage folks to stay away from those nasty cigarettes because, man, those data are compelling. This is just not a good habit.
Absolutely. And with regard to the cigarette smoking and the cannabis smoking, I've got a question that just popped up into my mind. And that is, I speak with a lot of people who try vaporization and they like it. It seems to work all okay. But they always come back to smoking, particularly folks maybe of an older generation who are into the doobies, right? Rolling a doobie and smoking that doobie. And I wonder if that action, the action of smoking, the feeling of taking smoke into one's lungs itself is kind of an addictive thing, not physically addictive, but more of a habit-forming thing. And that might be why it's tough for people who are smoking cigarettes to use cannabis as an alternative.
In fact, that is reinforcing that sense of smoke going down the throat, if you will. And unfortunately, that's been paired with nicotine literally hundreds of thousands of times in most experienced smokers. So the opportunity to use cannabis as a substitute really isn't there because you're essentially just increasing your nicotine craving by providing all these cues for the smoke without the nicotine itself. Also, I mean, I hate to say it, but many, many cigarette smokers have paired cannabis and nicotine so many times that it also ends up being really something that makes relapse more likely rather than less likely.
Okay. Green Girl 3 here has a question about the properties of the roots of the cannabis plant. She says she's been saving roots to make into a cream. What do we know about the root ball of the cannabis plant and its uses medicinally or otherwise?
As it turns out, unless it's like cold winter time, the cannabis plant really keeps all its cannabinoids and things like that out in the leaves and buds, so the roots aren't particularly psychoactive. Now, perhaps there are other aspects of the plant that would be useful in something from the roots, but we just don't have those data, and it seems like as far as cannabinoids are concerned, there wouldn't be very many present.
Okay, let's go on here. More questions. We're taking your questions live in the chat room for Dr. Mitch Earlywine, a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany. Again, author of many cannabis books, not the least of which Understanding Marijuana. So let's see here. Question for the doctor from Ithaca 420. I had one grandparent with schizophrenia. Am I safe to smoke the herb?
Odds are high, yes. The clincher is, what is your subjective experience when you use it? If you find that you have a lot of magical ideation, you start thinking zombies rule Belgium or that the police are after you when they're really not, then this really isn't the plant for you. But again, schizophrenia, though highly genetic compared to, say, other mental disorders, is still not the kind of thing that's really heavily loaded. Even folks with identical twins who are schizophrenic aren't schizophrenic, so that's something that's worth keeping an eye on, but not necessarily a done deal as far as never using, at least among adults.
Well, okay, but let's not discount the possibility of Belgian zombies. It might explain those waffles. All right. Another question here from Matter of Liberty. Why can no level of impairment be determined for cannabis like it can alcohol? I guess he's referring to blood alcohol content with DUIs and such.
And the clincher here, and I feel the same way for alcohol, actually, is what matters is your psychomotor abilities, not any level of a drug in your blood. So, as embarrassing and weird as this sounds, I had clients who were severe alcoholics who, if they were below 0.02, they had to shake so bad they couldn't drive. And in fact, they drove better if they had a couple of beers. So you can see how this measure of blood alcohol concentration is not a good predictor, really, or an ideal one, of ability to drive. And the same with cannabinoids. I much prefer the roadside sobriety tests. And, you know, we joked about this last time, but literally, can you stand on one foot with the other foot extended for 30 seconds and count out loud and juggle and ride a unicycle? By all means, you can drive a car.
Absolutely. Okay. Question here from Rolla J, kind of a follow-up on the whole notion of the cannabis salves. Would using those salves or cannabis lotions make you test positive on a workplace drug screen?
Again, if the THC isn't really absorbing through the skin, then it shouldn't. But if all these people are reporting these psychoactive effects of the salves, clearly the research literature hasn't caught up with the quality of the salves that are available today. So I would be a little apprehensive. And man, if you can find a job where you're not subject to those things, by all means, take it.
Okay. We have some questions. A lot of people in the chat room who are concerned about you, Dr. Mitch, and how goes the studying for your drug test?
Well, so I passed the home test yesterday, and I'm supposed to schedule my one for the long-term care insurance sometime next week. But believe me, it was a gruelingly long 420.
Don't worry, Dr. Mitch. We will make up for it, I promise, at the normal conference.
We'll take care of you. Okay, moving on to another question. This one's more of a political one from Kentucky Cannabis. Why is it that so many doctors won't support our cause when all the science and the American Medical Association statement that was released is all on our side?
When I speak to physicians about this, they're afraid like anybody else, and I think we all started out a little bit afraid before we got into the movement. I think about the conversations I had with my wife before Understanding Marijuana came out, and now I sort of laugh at my former self at how paranoid and freaky I was about it. And I think as more and more physicians come forward, it'll be more comfortable for still more to come out. The other thing is I think they have these concerns about dosage that are really unjustified. They're accustomed to prescribing drugs where they can say, take 25 milligrams of this and 40 milligrams of that. And as we get more and more precise in our estimates of THC and cannabidiol concentration and the strains that are available, I think they're going to become more secure in their prescriptions. And by all means, let's talk it up, spread the word, and, you know, point out all these wonderful people who are regular users who seem to love it and have wonderful functioning lives. And I think all the physicians will come around relatively soon.
Okay, we hope for that. We need more and more physicians to be backing this up. Sometimes I feel these physicians really want to, but the way healthcare is structured in this country with health maintenance organizations, clinics that they work for, large hospital corporations won't let them. So that I think that's part of the roadblock as well. Can you agree with that?
Indeed, and I mean this is really their bread and butter. It's easy for some academic like me to say, oh yeah, hey, it's all good. But I'm not likely to lose my job over such a position, and these guys have a little more at stake.
Mm-hmm. Okay, another question about the topical ointment seems to be the theme for today, and this is about using a cannabis topical ointment to heal an open wound. And would it get you high if it was applied to an open wound? That is, it's not having to go through the skin, it's actually, you know, touching the open wound.
So in theory, yes, it would. But it depends upon the makings of the salve. It's obviously going to have to be dissolved in a fatty substance for it to be able to be absorbed. And so I clearly need to get some samples of these salves to find out what people are doing to make these. But, you know, the standard over-the-counter, mix hemp in this thing you get from Bath and Beyond or something is clearly not going to do it that way. We obviously just need more data on this. I'm always a little reluctant to put salves on open wounds anyway. I think the clincher there is keeping them clean and keeping them dry is more important than a lot of the ointments, unless they're pretty strong antibacterial stuff that you get from the pharmacy.
Yeah, Dr. Mitch, I'll have Russ send you the recipe that we've been using at the cafe. He'll email it to you this week.
That sounds great.
Okay, a question from Oakland County Normal up in Michigan, and they know that the president of Oakland County Normal, Greg Piasecki, recently died from a glioblastoma, and they want to know, glioblastoma, a type of brain cancer, they want to know, is there any ongoing research between cancer and cannabis compounds besides Dr. Guzman in Spain?
As it turns out, that's at least the most recently published. We're trying to get more animal work done on this. The way that glial works and the development of these tumors is a giant mystery, really complicated, really revealing, but we're really in the dark on this one. In truth, it seems likely that given some of the anti-tumor properties of THC and the other cannabinoids, that he probably lasted longer than he would have under other circumstances, but we need a dramatic amount more work on this, and, you know, that's a horrible loss. I just feel terrible about that.
Yeah. Okay. Apparatus Beats has a question regarding the genetics of cannabis here and wants to know, would it be possible, just theoretically possible, for two strains of cannabis to have the exact same profile of THC to CBD ratio, terpenes, flavonoids, and so on? Is that even possible, or is that what makes them different strains?
In fact, it's theoretically possible at least for THC and cannabidiol, but the idea that they would have identical flavonoids and terpenes and things like that is extremely unlikely. And it's funny because we don't know their function very well, but often you can tell simply from smell and taste that the strains are different under those circumstances.
Okay. NorCal Kid has a question. This was, again, about these topical ointments, these salves. What's the best base for a salve? What other herbs have analgesic effects that they might combine with this salve?
I'm clearly going to have to review this literature more closely, Russ, because this is taking off in directions that I haven't mastered.
Okay.
So I'm eager to look into this, and I'll get back to folks next week with a big salve report.
Okay, the salve report. And I'll get you that recipe as well. Okay, question from Destruction, and wants to know, why is our government allowed to have a patent on cannabinoids and yet declare marijuana has no medical utility?
This is a beautiful one, isn't it? So, in fact, you can get THC, the active ingredient, in a sesame oil pill as long as you're willing to pay a pharmaceutical company for it. But God forbid you'd grow it in your own backyard. Yeah, there is absolutely no rationale that I can see that would explain that one.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Question from Hemp Man here, who's looking to the future and to employment. What would you recommend for someone who wants to pursue an occupation in research, researching cannabis, medical use or social use, anything like that? What kind of degree?
I think the clincher on this is really follow your bliss. Go to the classes and see which ones really get you eager to do the reading. And so I've had students who came to me dying to be psychologists, and then once they got into a policy class, they realized this is the direction they want to go, and I say, by all means, go for it. I've had other folks who suddenly wake up in botany and say, this is the path for me. And unfortunately, there's no one, fortunately, there's no one path for everybody. And I think that the clincher is pay attention to your own signal, so to speak. Which one really rocks your buzz? That's definitely the one to do.
Yeah, I always find, you know, follow what you like to do and you'll never work a day in your life, right? Because you'll enjoy what you love doing. People ask me sometimes, how do you get a job, what you do, doing radio with Normal? And I say, well, be a club musician for about 15 years. it's a very long and strange path that got us all here. So you're right, there's no one way to get there.
I say, well, be an alcohol researcher for 15 years and then see what happens.
Yeah,
you just got to follow what you enjoy, and it's stunning how this stuff works. Where is the market going? Well, clearly, if you're going to be a cannabis legal activist, there are only so many jobs, but there's plenty of stuff you can do to keep your skills sharp and to just make sure you're having an enjoyable day.
All right, we got time for a couple more questions here, so this will be it for what we take here on the show. But remember, you can always email your questions to 420research@gmail.com. Chemical Reality wants to know, have there been any studies on this so-called green sickness, this puking from only marijuana use? And I think this is that marijuana hyperemesis syndrome was the technical term for it. Anything new on that?
Yes, so the individual case studies are still out there, but we're seeing sort of a publication bias against folks who report the opposite. So if you have cyclical vomiting and you're cured by cannabis, for some reason your case doesn't show up in the medical journals. And so I'm eager to try to interpret those cases with at least two grains of salt, shall we say. And again, we're talking about an incredibly rare disorder, so the chance that this is illusory is definitely still out there. There may be a subset of folks who have this aversive reaction to cannabis, and obviously they should stay away from it, just as we've had folks who, you know, try it the first time and just don't like it. And so we need to keep that in mind. That's, of course, you know, as Paul says about the allergies to peanuts, that's no reason to throw people in jail for owning a plant.
Absolutely. Okay, for our last question today in our cannabis science segment, we've got one from Life Trip, a variation on something that's been asked before, but it always makes a good ending question because we can talk about your books, and that is, what is the best way to approach physicians about supporting this medicine? There are a lot of cancer doctors in my area, and I want to help change their minds and change the laws.
As self-serving as it sounds, if you go in with understanding marijuana under your arm, you're literally sending the message to them that this is the topic, and you can open up the conversation relatively quickly along those lines. I think also if you give them the acknowledgement right up front, hey, I know this is a difficult topic, but I wanted to spend 5 minutes talking about medical cannabis, particularly for you oncologists. Can we do that? And they're never going to say, oh, yeah, hooray, you know, but once in a while, they'll get 3 minutes of their time to just make your case. Anything you can leave behind, a printout of a journal article, a Xerox of a couple pages out of my book, anything like that is always going to be a plus because they're, you know, they're busy during the day, but these guys go home and have leisure time too, and that might be the opportunity for them to read an abstract and suddenly plant that seed, so to speak. And they may not react great to you, but you're often the first of 5, 6, 7, 11 people who will suddenly get this person to turn the corner and start making these recommendations and helping really the sickest of the sick become well.
That's right. Check out Dr. Mitch's book, Understanding Marijuana, as well as Parents' Guide to Marijuana and More, Pot and Politics, the editor. You can get them all through Amazon.com. Just type in Dr. Mitch Earlywine, EARLEYWINE, into the search engine in Amazon. You should find him. Thanks again, Dr. Mitch. We'll see you next week.
Always a pleasure.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out,
get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our daily audio stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org.
It only comes twice a day, but I don't care. It's 420 somewhere.
All right, real quick here, a look at our cannabis community calendar, which you can find at norml.org/calendar. CSU Fresno is having their meeting tonight, as well as Tulsa Normal tonight, Wednesday, April 28th. Tomorrow, Thursday, April 29th, University of New Hampshire Normal is having their meeting. All this week, the North and Superior Adopt-a-Highway Pickup in Michigan. Check out Michigan Normal, minormal.org, for information on those Adopt-a-Highways. But of course, the big cannabis community calendar event this week is this Saturday, May 1st, the Global Cannabis March, the Global Marijuana March, May 1st. Now, in some countries, it's on May 8th because May 1st is May Day, and that's an international labor holiday in a lot of countries. And other places have May 8th as the rain day if it goes bad on May 1st. Not here in Portland, Oregon. We don't believe in rain days because they're all rain days. So we will be marching on May 1st and streaming live, Normal Show Live from live.normal.org, streaming all day from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. from the Pioneer Courthouse Square. It'll also include our new live remote netbook, this Acer netbook, not courtesy of, but thanks to Bong Rip from Bong TV, who taught me how to set up this little mini port thing here. We're going to be walking with that through the march, so you'll actually get the point of view of a marcher in Portland's Cannabis March.
I suppose that's courtesy of Normal.
That's right. It's courtesy of Normal, thanks to Bong Rip. Yeah, yes, there we go. Yeah, and so many things in our show are thanks to a Bong Rip here and there.
Yeah.
But anyway.
A lot of our ideas, at least.
Well, some of the ideas. But anyway, check out the listings at globalmarijuanamarch.org, or just go to normal.org and you can see a list of cities that are participating. On our cannabis community calendar, I've got them listed for Traverse City, Kansas City, Cleveland, San Diego, all sorts of normal chapters are involved, at least 40 normal chapters involved in the over 300 cities that are participating in the Global Cannabis March. For more information, check out Normal's Cannabis Community Calendar at normal.org/calendar. We don't have anything else. Oh, well, I just have to start ranting. Okay. Well, I did want to bring up a little news piece that's up on the Normal front page right now, and it's a new study that shows that workplace urine testing programs are a poor method for identifying employees who are under the influence and do not significantly reduce job accident rates. This is a new study published in the journal Addiction, and you know that it is a drug test that brought me here to working for Normal. There's a long story about that. You can check it out at our blog, stash.normal.org. But I just wanted to get this quote out. Researchers found, quote, "It is not clear that heavy cannabis users represent a meaningful job safety risk unless using before or on the job. Urine tests have poor validity and low sensitivity to detect employees who represent a safety risk. Drug testing is related to reductions in the prevalence of cannabis-positive tests among employees, but this might not translate into fewer cannabis users. And urinalysis has not been shown to have a meaningful impact on job injury or accident rates." End quote. The authors concluded, quote, "Urinalysis testing is not recommended as a diagnostic tool to identify employees who represent a job safety risk from cannabis use." End quote. Well, you know what? It's never been about a safety risk with drug testing. Even they know it. If they were worried about safety risks, they'd stop people from having those three martini lunches. If they were worried about safety risks, they'd test employees to see whether or not they're tired or hung over from the night before. If they were really worried about safety risks, they wouldn't allow employees to work who are on Oxycontin or Percocets like they have in some situations here in the state of Oregon. We know it's all a sham. It's time to end workplace urine testing. It's meaningless and it's discriminatory. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us here from Rolla J Studios in beautiful Potland, Oregon. It's not a typo. It's a way of life. For Ganja John, Cannabis Carry, I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers. Make sure to join us on Saturday for our 499th show, live.normal.org from the Global Cannabis March in Portland, Oregon. I'll be playing bass, speaking, and marching for you.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it out one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.